From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome to the Jack and Spike Show. The fentanyl crisis is showing up in places in Washington that aren't controlled by Democrats. Isn't that so fascinating? I thought it was only a Democrat disease.
You would be led to believe that
fentanyl was only in certain portions of the state. The CEO of Boeing has decided to step down. I have some strong opinions about what's going on with that, especially after the FBI was talking about what they think happened in terms of them being a victim of an actual crime.
Yeah, the passengers have been alerted.
I'm thinking, yep. Nicholas, it's a little bit of the old sabotage. You know what I'm talking about? A little bit of the old industrial sabotage if those people are victims. Get on my level, you guys. This is some serious sabotage that's going on right now. That's what the FBI is saying. What is it, 1,000 people, 1,200 people? They're saying are potentially crime victims. What does that say?
It says the cover-up's always worse than the crime itself. Always. When will we learn?
That's what I'm saying, as I legitimately think that there's somebody who's potentially might be intentionally trying to hamstring these planes. I don't know, but we'll talk about it. Before we get to all that, though, protesters were arrested, in City Hall last month. You guys all remember this?
These are the window bangers, right?
It's also the people that were asked to leave and then they didn't want to leave. So they were just charged by the city attorney. Now, the reason that this is fascinating for a number of reasons is that Laura pointed out that Ann Davison said, now, being that Ann Davison is a woman, Laura, I feel like it might be better if you said this into the microphone with the exact amount of intensity that you believe Ann Davison would have said this when she was talking about the new versus the old. What did she say?
Oh, she said that this was that might have played before in that last council.
Yep.
Not today.
Not today.
Boom, baby.
Not today.
Not today.
If you interrupt, I'm going to completely disrupt your right to free speech. That's what I'm going to do.
That's stepmom energy.
Right. Well, that's what I'm thinking is that she's coming in and saying, you boys might have been staying up past 10 p.m. with your old mom, but new mom is coming in and you guys are going to bed by 9:30.
Nine new sheriffs in town.
I think that she might be trying to, this seems like a little bit of, puffery. It seems like a little bit of just trying to make it seem as if, hey, you guys, I'm actually really doing my job now, even though it's been a month, right? I mean, it's a little sloppy, in my opinion.
We're setting boundaries.
Right, but boundaries would be, I don't know, pressing charges within the first, let's call it week, maybe? That's a nice time to press charges. A month after it happens, and then you say, yeah, so we're going to charge them with first-degree criminal trespassing, which is a fine. Ooh, spooky, a fine, right? I mean, it's come on.
364 days in jail potentially for the max.
It's going to be a fine, and it's probably going to be suspended because they're going to plea on undue financial burden because none of those people have jobs. So, I understand that people want to see these kinds of prosecutions take place, but here's the other question you have to ask yourself. Let's say you give them a year. Let's say you max them out. You give them 364 days. You're paying taxpayer dollars to take six people who banged against glass and put them in prison for 364 days. To the tune of Washington State, on average, it's $110,000 a year per prisoner to keep them in lockdown. So you're going to pay $500,000. Because these kids decided, I'm just saying, this is what I mean by the puffery of it.
Yeah.
You're going to go in there. Is that what the expectation is? Tough on crime, cracking down on these people. Yeah, let's blow $500,000 on keeping them in prison, right?
Yeah, you're setting the tone for the future workings of the city council.
Right. Don't talk to the city council.
Well,
hold on.
Tammy Morales, who came out and said that this could cause long-term harm, upending the protesters' lives.
Please.
That's what jail does. That's what consequences do.
Yeah.
Long-term harm for being held accountable. All the folks that were told to leave and didn't keep messing around, didn't keep banging on windows, none of them were charged. These six people who couldn't take leave for an answer. I mean, I'm all for public protest. I'm all for the right to speak up on your positions.
Yeah.
When it comes to a point where you're physically threatening, because some of the council said they felt physically threatened by these protesters.
I feel physically threatened every day working here. You're all going to prison. I felt a certain way is not a legal standard, right? Like, I feel like, they were banging against glass. I feel super scared right now. I said, come on, man. They're a bunch of kids. You give them a $200 fine. You give them, 40 hours of community service. We call it a day. They don't have jobs. They can do that in a week. And we'll move on with our lives.
You're another common sense solution, my friend.
I'm just saying. All right. Speaking of common sense, by the way, there was a story in the Seattle Times that I saw yesterday that I wanted to talk about. Because normally when we talk about fentanyl use and you talk about drug addiction, we're always talking about the leftists in King County, right?
Yeah,
we're always talking about this.
Everything I drive through on my way to work every day. Exactly. Going for fast food there. It's meant fentanyl.
It's a leftist everywhere.
Drop it off recycling. There's more fentanyl.
Bringing fentanyl into King County. Now, but this one is in a county that Spike is the only human being in this building who can decipher this.
It's Klickitat County.
Thank you so much, Mr.
County Goldendale.
So this is in, it's in Southern Washington.
South Central.
South Central.
The Yakima Indian, I think it's Yakima Indian Reservation.
Right.
Because the person in the story was a member of the Yakima Native tribe.
And so, you know, they're talking about this individual who ended up going to prison for fentanyl possession, and he ended up taking his life last May while he was in prison because he was having severe opiate withdrawals. Now, fentanyl withdrawals are different from heroin withdrawals. I don't usually talk about this, but Spike, Laura, I have an admission that I need to make to you guys. I'm going to be totally transparent. I used to do a lot of drugs. I know. And so I have experience with both heroin and fentanyl and cocaine and methamphetamine and PCP and ketamine and research chemicals that you can only get in the Soviet Union. I have experience with all kinds of drugs.
This is why feelings just bounce right off you, by the way. I know you built up this hard candy shell to be worried about feelings.
Exactly. And that's why I just constantly see spirals everywhere that I go. It's super weird. But
lucky.
I have a lot of experience with drugs. And so thank you so much there, Nicholas. Appreciate that one. And so fentanyl overdoses or withdrawals are deeply, deeply unpleasant to the bone, if that makes sense. Like heroin withdrawals, you just kind of feel sick. You just kind of feel, I got the flu. Ooh, I'm sick, right? Fentanyl withdrawals is you feel like your muscles are separating from your bones. It is one of the most uncomfortable feelings I've ever had in my life.
I had no idea. And the story that we're quoting
says
it was 50 times more powerful than or more. 50 times worse than heroin withdrawals?
It's 50 times more powerful, but the not feel good is also 50 times as bad, if that makes sense.
I can't even fathom.
So this guy's in this prison in Goldendale, and he decides that it's so bad that he needs to take his own life, largely because in this little teeny tiny county, they didn't have any buprenorphine or any methadone to give him. Now, 29 out of the 47 jails in the state have buprenorphine or methadone on tap, basically. But I think even less have methadone because it's so tightly regulated. Part of what Inslee was trying to do with this most recent budget proposal was to try to get most of these medications back into jail. The reason I want to talk about this is because we often focus on throw drug addicts in prison, and then they'll realize how bad withdrawals are, and then they'll never want to do drugs again. That's kind of old 1980s, 1990s thinking. Because now what you're seeing is people literally killing themselves in prison because it's so bad because they're understaffed. So when people talk about policy and when we talk about things that can actually make a huge change, I would submit to people that having buprenorphine, not methadone, because that's just state-sponsored drug addiction, but having buprenorphine, which is Suboxone or Subutex, having that in every single jail and every single prison throughout the state is a worthwhile investment because then you're literally taking drug addicts off the street and putting them right into treatment. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense.
Right.
And then when people are serving time and they aren't getting these kind of recovery assistance, then they're sent back out on the streets when they've served their time and they're right back into their addiction. They've had no chance to come down or recover in any way, shape, or form.
Well, and then also, like, if you look at, like, Suboxone or Subutex, I think it's Suboxone is kind of like Anabuse for alcoholics. You can't use on top of it. So if you get these guys on Suboxone...
Oh, okay.
And then, you know what Anabuse is?
I do. If you try to drink, you get sicker than a dog.
You're very ill, right.
So this does the same thing for the user.
Right, exactly. To a certain degree, right? Now, some people can try to get around it, but it doesn't always work very well. I mean, you can still get a little high, but you're going to be very ill. So.
And this jail over at Klickitat County, and that, not only did they not have the correct medication to help this kid withdraw, they put him alone in a cell.
Alone in a cell.
They put him in a cell that didn't have any kind of protection to keep him from hanging himself, from committing suicide.
Right.
A grate that wasn't covered. I mean, like, a cascading, everything that could have done wrong went wrong.
Right. And so this is why I think, you know, all too often what commentators will do is they'll point fingers and they'll say, it's your fault. It's your fault. Look at what these people, the leftists out there are ruining this country. What I think would be much more worthwhile is if we look at a story like this and then we contrast it with what Inslee did in terms of that budget proposal, and then we say, how do we prevent excess addict death in prison, which is going to be very expensive for the state, right? I mean, you're talking about lawsuits. You're talking about all, I mean, civil suits.
The family's going to take this, right. this jail and the county
right.
for the cleaners,
so
as they should.
You can solve it with about $7 million, or you can do payouts, which, you know, how much is a human life worth to a jury? $10 million? $20 million? Yeah. And then how many times does this have to happen before the state's in deep for a couple hundred mil, right?
Is denying a withdrawing addict in incarceration, isn't that fall under cruel and unusual?
Yeah. If you take an alcoholic who's a chronic alcoholic and you put him in a cell with no booze or no benzos, they're going to seize and they're going to die. I mean, that's just in the literature, right? If you take someone who's heavily addicted to Xanax or whatever it is, like we're talking about, a, you know, like a Little Peep levels of Xanax addiction or like... And you put them in a prison with no access. After about 24 hours, maybe less, they'll seize, and it'll be bad times.
And we have to lose their addicts. They deserve what happens to a mentality. Got to lose that mentality completely.
Yeah, that, and also like, you know, that kind of, I know some people have very cruel jokes, and they say that it's a self-solving problem when this happens, right? So, but I would recommend to people that in terms of policy, it would be much better if we kind of stave this off before it even gets worse. The Boeing CEO Dave Calhoun decided to step down in a leadership shakeup. Now, this is today's news, but last week, FBI was talking to Alaska Airlines, he's talking to the 1,282 passengers, and they said, you may be a victim of a crime. And I was thinking to myself, why is it, that the FBI is saying you might be a crime victim? Because a crime victim implies a criminal. And a criminal, or a ne'er-do-well, Nicholas, we know this.
Oh, yeah, ne'er-do-well. That's my common vocabulary.
It's someone who nary does well. Come on.
A scofflaw, as Crosscut put it the other day. Or was that the Olympian? I think it was the Olympian.
It was the Olympian. Good
right.
Memory.
So we all know that these people are embedded in our systems. We might have one in the building right now. A criminal amongst us. A maniac who's trying to sabotage this entire operation. And their name is Mickey Gomez. Oh, I'm calling it out. I'm calling it like how I see it. She's trying to disrupt this whole place. You guys can't see between the lines like how I can
Not
see.
Mickey.
It's Mickey.
No.
We're blinded by her kindness. Sticky Mickey.
Sticky Mickey Gomez. Constantly taking staples. Constantly taking pens. I see what's going on here. She's a criminal mastermind. So the agency, the FBI, sent a letter to passengers Tuesday last week confirming that the FBI has opened up a criminal investigation. Nick, this is clearly sabotage, right?
Yeah, to the highest degree.
This has got to be somebody who is, I'm just saying, if it's a criminal, either it's criminal negligence or it's someone who's intentionally trying to disrupt the manufacturing process.
You know what I think it might be? The obstruction of the video. There's no video of this thing being, we're talking about the side door and the four bolts, right? All of a sudden, this is the most meticulously recorded and you know, transcribed business in the world.
Yeah.
There's no paperwork on who didn't put the bolts on. There's no video of who didn't put the bolts on that day. I think the crime here is obstruction and destruction of evidence and the cover up.
Oh.
Even more so than the negligence of not slapping four bolts on a door plug. And then the FBI is going to investigate this as a potential criminal activity.
Okay, but this is
it could be criminal negligence. You could be right.
You would have to tell me that Boeing, who's lawyered up to the teeth, right? They're lawyered up to the gills, that they somehow were able to convince a small cabal of people within a very dense inner circle to erase footage and erase time cards in order so that they could avoid what?
Avoid the liability of forgetting to put four bolts on a door.
But they have liability insurance, my guy.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't think maybe, dude. I think for sure Boeing is lawyered up and insured to the gills, right? You're talking about flying people in a tube that defies the laws of God. So, you know what I mean? You're talking about...
I like the lies of God.
The lies of God. It defies his lies.
There are no accidents.
He said we couldn't fly.
He said we couldn't fly, but we can, right? So it defies the laws of God, and we shoot them over thousands of miles in a tube that's compressed so it doesn't explode from atmospheric pressure. Of course they're going to have liability insurance. Of course they're going to have corporate insurance. Of course they're covered for all of this. It makes no sense. Unless there was somebody, the ne'er-do-well, the scofflaw, who took it upon his or herself to go around and delete all that information. Sabotage, dude. Come on.
Sometimes the most obvious answer is correct. You know, but I will say this, because you brought this to my attention, the video of the guy that should have been putting the bolts on the door, that re-records every month. So the fact that this happened when the plane was constructed, there's no way that's around. But there's a sheet of paper somewhere saying who was on the clock that day, saying who was on that station, the bolt assembly station that day. Somebody went in and slipped in, grabbed that piece of paper, made it go away.
That's what we call a saboteur, my friend. Okay. A saboteur. See,
when you said sabotage, I'm thinking like some French guy from Airbus came in one day. I would have decent. He forgot to play. You know,
so Dave Calhoun has decided to step down. From leadership. Now, this is, I think it's sad that we see that the person who's on the chopping block is the guy. You know what I mean?
Top down. Yeah.
Dave Calhoun, I'm not trying to be cruel to the guy. I'm actually trying to argue in his defense. He probably doesn't even know the mechanism of bolt into panel. Do you know what I mean?
No, there was a thing as a door plug. Probably not.
That's my thought about it. And my evidence for this is if you ask most CEOs what they do, is they're basically cat wranglers. They're not specialists. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So I think that he's probably the sacrificial lamb.
Yeah, well, this used to be a bottom-up company. Now it's a top-down company that cares about money more than they care about builds.
Right, exactly.
So you cut the head off the snake, man.
Sabotage.
By the way, 5 years ago, almost to the day that Dave Calhoun got the gig, when the old CEO stepped down after the second Supermax crash.
Seattle man was convicted for severe cyber stalking of his ex-roommate. I gotta just say, this is a story that is as old as time. Stalking?
So, yeah.
Romeo and Juliet?
Sure. Yeah, it's true. It's the stalkers.
Tristan and Isolde. I mean, these are all stories. I think that maybe we need to reframe. We think about this stalking of this gentleman. We'll talk about it when we get back right after this.
The internet can be a dark and often dangerous place. Only one man has the courage to go where no sensible person would go. Jack Stein is Terminally Online.
Terminally Online, exploring the deepest, darkest reaches of the internet so you don't have to. A Seattle man was convicted for severe cyberstalking of his ex-roommate, police, and prosecutors. Now, that's not like his ex-roommate, say police and prosecutors. That's his ex-roommate, members of the police department, and prosecutors. Holy so I'm going to avoid saying this young man's name because I think he's had enough shame to last a lifetime. But he's 34 years old, and he basically started this extensive campaign of threats, sexually explicit messages, and posts about a woman who used to share an apartment with his wife. Right now, this isn't a love interest. This is just a hate interest, if that makes sense. So this is instead of infatuation, it's a what? Infuriation?
Yeah. So I'm trying to figure out why this guy would have such a thing against this victim. Did this victim and his ex-wife, or his estranged wife?
Yes.
Because she was part of the stalking parameters. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then when this gentleman got locked up, his wife said she felt safe to come clean and cooperate.
Right.
So apparently this wife's friend and her... The wife's friend was helping her try to get out from under this guy.
Right. And this guy is an insane person. But I think it just goes to show that the internet was indeed a tremendous mistake and that we should probably get rid of it. I've been making this case now for about 2 weeks that we should probably get rid of the internet, because this young man is roughly my age. He's only 2 years younger than I am. And he could have had what is otherwise a very normal life. He could have had what was otherwise. But instead, what gave him the ability, or what kind of manifested his insanity, was his computer tech skills. Now, the other part of this, though, that I kind of want to point out is that you have to have a deep psychological schism in order to be this obsessed with a group of people.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I know this from personal experience. I think I've told you this story, but I'll tell it again. I had a girlfriend, an on and off girlfriend for many, many years, and she broke up with me, or I broke up with her. I don't remember which time it was.
Okay.
But like 48 hours later, after saying, "I'll never speak to you again," like 48 hours later, I was like, "Please talk to me." I think I was like 21 years old or something like that.
Well, you were about average for guys, so that's what we did.
So I called her. She didn't pick up the phone. I'm upset. So I called her again. Doesn't pick up the phone. I'm deeply upset. This is before iPhone. This is Nokia 1381. Do you know what I mean? This is the Nokia days. This is brick phones. She's not picking up the phone. I called her 20 times in a single. I say this as a statement for other young men out there. I'm able to live with my own shame on this issue. Called her 20 times that day. Please call me back. I was an emotional mess, right?
Yeah. And each one doesn't seem so bad.
Each one, individually. No. I mean, but
every voicemail has a purpose.
Voicemail. I was away from the phone. I don't know if you called me. I don't know or not. Even though I have, call waiting. She calls me back at the end of the day. And she says, Jack, listen, I was at a concert and I was outside and I left my phone in the car. And I just decided not to leave the concert to get my phone because they have no ins or outsies at this particular outdoor festival. Mm. And she said, I care for you very much. And so I will tell you this because I think that you will respect it. If you were anybody else, I would have already called the police and I would have already gotten a restraining order. But because you're you, I think that you will understand that this is not healthy and I think you need to stop. And I said, thank you so much. And I never spoke to her again.
That was a gift.
I took the hint.
Yep.
I took the hint, which is why when I see stories like this, I understand what that mechanism is of like that deep need to have someone either recognize you, fear you, love you, whatever it is. It's a deep insecurity. So when they say, okay, well, we're going to give him 5 years or whatever, I actually think that this guy, I say this all the time, but I actually think he needs locked care, right? This is somebody who, sure, there are violent threats in there.
Yeah,
sure, there are whatever. I actually think that this guy needs locked care so that he can have kind of the version that I had where my ex-girlfriend told me, don't do this because it makes you look crazy. But he needs that with people in white coats who are shooting him up with, Toradol or whatever it is, right?
Yeah. This guy's an evil genius. This guy's computer skills were off the charts. They had to bring in the Secret Service to help because of the way he was redirecting addresses. He was coming at him
that's
from
what, that's
fake
what I'm
accounts.
About.
I mean, this,
that's what I'm talking about. Like the deep mental illness of this is what is so profound about this.
But do we all have to lose our internet because this guy's nuts?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I think we do because what the internet does is it allows the worst aspects of ourselves to be on full display and to be manifested, if that makes sense.
Sure.
So
facilitates least.
I see it when people talk about politics. I see it when people talk about religion on the internet. I see it when people talk about race and ethnicity. When you don't actually have to see the human across from you, when you're just looking at the numb black screen that we all call the internet, that's literally soul sucking. When you just get to yell at somebody. Mm. Like, did you guys? Okay, so if you're a regular listener to the show, you'll know this story. But about 2 weeks ago, we got a nasty, vile comment on our YouTube channel, The Jack and Spike Show, which you can subscribe to now. And I said, after reading this comment, I'm not going to delete it. I'm going to respond to this guy in the kindest way I possibly can. I'm going to say, I'm going to respond to this guy in the nicest way I possibly can. No namaste, no God bless, no passive aggressiveness.
Okay.
I'm going to just be as kind as I possibly can. That guy wrote us back and he said, hey, man, sorry, I was just blowing off steam. I think you guys are actually pretty cool.
Wow.
That mechanism, that tool is something that only me and Nicholas use. Nobody else on the internet uses it. We're pioneers. We're Lewis and Clark.
We're leading the pack.
We're leading the pack, right? We're connoisseurs, right? We're trying to make a difference, traversing the virgin territory of the internet by being kind to other people. This is what allowed, the inverse of that is what this guy has. Violence, sexual assaults, rape depictions that he was making towards his ex-wife's roommate. When we allow that or when we exercise it, it just grows like with any other muscle. But people don't understand that, which is why I get death threats or whatever it is, because people don't understand that that's literally psychopathic. Do you know what I mean?
They've got no investment in making that statement. Because they can just type into a keyboard and hit send. There's no consequence for it.
Right.
Right? So that they have no idea what it does, what the damage done is, because they got nothing, no skin in the game.
But it's more so damaging to themselves, right?
Yeah.
Like this guy,
this
young man has done more damage to himself and his own psyche by allowing that monster to take over. And my thought is that you have to be a little bit more, understanding and a little bit more present with yourself when you're on the internet.
Well, yeah, I agree. And his wife had said that, she didn't come forward sooner because she feared verbal, physical abuse from him. So this guy's broken went all the way across the spectrum. Right. Every aspect of his life.
All right, we'll take a really quick break. Guacamole was suspected in a Seattle E. coli outbreak. Everybody on the internet was talking about it. They were like, no.
These were big fans.
Right, exactly.
Big, big fans.
We'll talk about it when we get back right after this. So I'm on the internet yesterday, come across a story that says PCC guacamole suspected an E. coli outbreak. And as I'm scrolling through the comment section, all I see is people who are just suffering. They're all saying, no, I love PCC. How could this be the case? And then on top of all that, people are saying, throw out your guacamole now, even though this all happened a month ago. But I think it just goes to show how, I don't know, like obsessed the people can get with a store or a brand. Are you a PCC person, Laura?
When I can afford it.
Okay. Yeah. I've never been to one. Is it expensive? Why is it so expensive? What is so unbelievably fancy about PCC?
You will not find the standard box of crackers walking down the cracker aisle of a PCC. You'll find these boutique-y artisan. All their products are a little one step above generic shopping so, doldrums.
Like the Keebler elves are actually there.
No.
And I believe it's pronounced cocker.
Cocker.
Not cracker.
Yeah.
Yes, these are elves from a more prestigious, higher up on the hillside region of Bavaria that make the crackers at PCC.
Yeah.
Plus, their on-site food production is seriously restaurant quality, world-class food. They have a hot section that they do every day, different menus. Cold deli section do every day, different menus. They have a hot food bar, hot soup bar, that kind of thing. They have a fresh on-site baker every day. So people, that's a very European way to shop when you go to PCC.
So no employees have been reported sick with STEC, or that's Shiga toxin-producing E. coli. Now, I think that level of food poisoning is what they tend to get in third world countries, which I'm very surprised with the fact that it showed up at PCC. Generally, that's like a raw chicken type of thing, right? That's like a really gross kind of bacteria
It's higher up on the, or lower on the food chain. Than this, you should say. And this is only the West Seattle PCC that this particular strain has been thinking of. Five people actually got sick, all had that commonality of purchase.
Okay, so let me ask you guys this question. Is there a food that you ate and subsequently became ill as a result of eating and will never eat again? Laura?
I was not here on Friday because I dared to try sushi from Fred Meyer.
Oh, no.
Were they out of gas station sushi?
My mistake.
Right.
Who could have seen that coming?
So mine was, this is super niche, but it's the only one that got me every time. So I know it was that thing.
Uh-huh.
At the University of California, Santa Cruz, they had a delicious fish sandwich, which was a certain kind of a tilapia, but it wasn't the fish itself. It was whatever aioli,
right.
You know, thing they put on top of it. I had the fish sandwich one time. It was delicious, like a fish po' boy, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Little thin slice of ham on there. Yeah, well. Oh, it was to die for. I ate like three of them. 45 minutes later, I'm just having the worst time ever.
Yeah, condiments are usually the target that gets you.
Right, so I'm thinking to myself, well, it can't be the delicious fish sandwich. So when they had it the following month, I said to myself, bring me another round of fish sandwich. Same thing.
Oh, no.
So it was whatever what they were doing with that particular makeup was the thing that got me every time. Spike, any food that you actively avoid?
You know, I have to start this by saying I'm Irish, and I can eat anything, literally. I and maybe it's just me.
Irish. I told Brian I would never work with an Irish.
I'll just pack my stuff. my family will tell you there's nothing in that fridge that I can't scrape clean and eat still. I've never had a food that made me sick.
That's just dad power.
That's dad power.
Is it dad power? It's not Irish.
I'm Irish too, part Irish. Maybe that's why. But
Irish. I told Brian I'd never work with an Irish.
I've joked that I'm like the canary in the coal mine. Like if we've all eaten something, I will be the first to fall, and other people are looking at me in fear. Like, oh, it's coming for me.
You're like the food taster of the group. They watch you and have a fork full.
I'm the court jester.
Okay,
yeah.
It's good.
Nicholas, any foods that you now actively avoid after consuming them?
There was one time I was desperate for dinner one night, and I went over to Walmart, and there was this one viral TikToker trucker that, like, you know, he ate all the different kinds of things at Walmart, you know, like cheeses and and vegetables, whatever. And he also loved, his favorite was the canned Vienna sausages. And he would even open it up and drink the juice that was inside the sausage.
Oh, trucker. So he's not human.
Just out of curiosity, because he made it look so delicious, I tried one. I grabbed one from the shelf and I took it home and I ate it. And it was not the best idea. It reminded me of like sausage bologna in a way. And I was like, I'll just go for a can of tuna instead.
When I got into running, I was talking with a therapist at the time who was also a long distance runner. And she says to me, she goes, you know what you have to start drinking on a regular basis? I said, what? She goes, you have to start drinking pickle brine. Pickle brine, right?
Okay.
Because you're going to get sodium in your body. Mm-hmm. You're going to get all the phytonutrients, whatever that might mean. And so she says, here's the brand of pickle brine that I ingest. So I think to myself, I am supposed to drink the entire jar,
not just a
shot glass of it, which was the intended amount. That is, if I had read the label, it said you should probably drink about 2 or 3 fluid ounces of this once a day, because it's basically just salt and water. So I decide to myself that I'm going to sit down and I'm going to polish off. Because if she can do it, by golly, I can
sit
down.
Sure, you're a real man.
So I'm drinking this pickle brine and I'm just in deep pain as I'm trying to drink. It's like saltier than eating a bowl of salt, to make a future Rama reference. But it was so bad. So Sarah comes in and she goes, what are you drinking? Because the fumes of it are taking the paint off the walls. And it's pickle brine.
Put down this pickle brine.
I've been just drinking this pickle brine.
Traitor sit.
And as I'm like 3/4 of the way through it, she picks it up and she goes, Jack, you're only supposed to drink like a shot glass of this every day. And I'm like,
meanwhile, you're folded over like a pocket knife.
I was dead from drinking that pickle brine.
Well, Jack, I think you'd love PCC. I honestly think you should check it out.
Yeah, I am a man of class.
I think you would find your passion.
I am, exactly. So, and I am also very, very wealthy. So I'm sure when I go there, they'll open the door for me. I'll walk in my 3-piece suit, maybe my tux and tails. And I can get...
ask for the personal shopper.
I shall do that, as a matter of fact. I'll have a servant come out, because I don't actually touch the food that I consume.
No. Come on.
You take it off the shelf. We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, old friend of the show is coming in, Chuck. You guys remember Chuck? No one remembers Chuck. I remember Chuck. He's the guy who donated all that money to Treehouse. So
Chuck, an engineer, right, by trade?
Yeah. I told Chuck last time he was on, because he donated so much money to Treehouse. I said to him, as a kindness, I said, Chuck, you come on anytime you want to. He says, I'll take you up on that.
He has a great radio voice.
Exactly. Too. And so he emails me last week and he goes, hey, can I come on Monday? And I go, promises made, promises kept.
There you go. We had a banner made.
Local hero Chuck coming on in a couple of few right after this.